In this series, we'll be talking to a selection of second and third year HE students from Hull College about their upcoming degree show. Hello and welcome to Series 3, Episode 1 of Yada Chat. In this episode, we're going to hear from the third year BA Fine Art course and talk to each of them individually about their practice and current project. The degree students involved include Miles, Jules, Kira, Tonks, Tom, Del and Maria. Joined with us now, we are with Miles Noble. So hi Miles, it's great to have you on. How's everything going?
It's going all right. First of all, thanks for having me. This is
lovely to see you as always.
Yeah, I've been quite a fan of your work for some time, so it's quite interesting being in the booth, you know, working on the sort of visual side for my final degree show. So yeah, that's what I've been cracking on with.
All exciting stuff. Like now is, it's like the calm before the storm, isn't it? It's like
you've
got a little bit of time and then all of a sudden it's going to be like, right,
yeah, out. Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, we've only got a few weeks, so there's definitely a bit of stress going on. There's still time to figure things out a little bit. It's not completely, you know, oh, no, rush, panic.
Yeah. That's good. Well, on the subject of art, you know, has that always been an interest for you? And what brought you onto the course in the first place?
That's a tricky one because I have always been interested in art and I think in creative things, but I never really had the confidence to pursue it. Mm. And then I had some mates who studied fine art. Yeah, my friends were very creative people and I was always more into sort of music and film and things like that, but I didn't really know that was what I wanted to do. And like I said, I didn't really feel like I had the confidence because it wasn't something that I really practiced. Didn't really start making things until I started studying. I think what did it for me was just a couple of things like circumstances at home. Mm. Like my mum was diagnosed with terminal cancer. Around that time, I'd sort of hit like a wall in my life. I didn't really know what I wanted to do at all. Mm. And obviously, here we are now, you know, final year of the degree. But I didn't think it was going to be like that when I started studying. I thought I was amazed that I made it past 6 months, you know, because until that point, I would sort of drop out of things. I was, you know, I just took so many different things, placements, traineeships, whatever.
Well, it seems like you were sort of just waiting for the right area, the right sort of topic, and it's like, well, creativity in general, it's like when you find something that you really enjoy, it's not like work really.
I mean, I was really lucky because my parents were always really supportive. I feel like you have to carve your own path a little bit. I don't know, maybe you're more equipped to say that.
In terms of carving a path, like that's definitely, I guess, what you could say I did. Anyway, now we're here.
Yeah.
In the podcast suite.
The super swanky podcast suite. with pink walls as well. Pink neon walls. And a lava lamp.
So to those listening, it looks better than it sounds. Miles, tell me a bit about your practice, and because I know in the past you've liked to incorporate performance and music into your work.
Yeah.
Tell me a bit.
I always say it's multimedia what I do. I just say it's an all-encompassing thing. I think I'm always just driven by what motivates me emotionally, I think. Yeah, this year is going to be kind of a combination of painting and music installation. But yeah, I did performance in the first year and that had like a sound-based element. We used to have you'll remember, but before the studios went through, I guess, a new
COVID safety change. Yeah.
We had these like free wooden tables that were a sturdy thing, weren't they? And you could totally, it looked like a stage, basically. It was just this square stage in the centre of this room, and acoustically.
You made it work to your advantage.
Yeah. It was almost like a response to that. I think what started that was I did in my final year on the Access course before I started my degree. We had Chris Wiles, and with Chris, I made a film which was kind of like a performance thing with my friend. And Chris saw those, and he was just like, right, like I think you should do an actual in the moment performance. And it just connected with those three tables. It just all clicked. It was like, oh, that was the perfect environment. So yeah, what I did was is I laid some parchment down and I wanted like an instrument. And so basically what would happen is I'd rub this chain in red paint and then just sort of smash the chain on the table, and it would kind of create this sound, but it would also create like a painting as well. So you'd have like the remnants of the performance. I did something similar for the second one, which was downstairs. That was sort of like a gold leaf, a similar thing, but instead of painting, I wanted to kind of leave the chains where there was and sort of create like a kind of like a configuration, you know, kind of like a just once again, just remnants. I was really interested in that. Performances are obviously, you know, they last in that moment. I think that's the real kind of driving force of performances, being in that kind of really vulnerable situation. For my second year, I completely stopped it and went a totally different direction. And I started doing these kind of wall murals, which you've seen. And that was really just to kind of free myself up a little bit because, like my mum had died just before COVID had hit. Yeah, sort of that year I kind of dropped out, you know, I dropped out of the second year and I sort of came back and I just wanted to do something that kind of freed me up emotionally. I just wanted to do a process that was like fun, just something I could put all my energy in, but not emotionally. I just didn't feel sort of ready to become super stressed again. and then with this year it's kind of gone full circle. I've sort of gone back to the sort of musical elements a little bit more.
Yeah, so tell me more about what we should expect with this year and the degree show and your work.
Well, what you should expect is hopefully some really nice paintings.
Very nice.
With a very nice soundtrack to accommodate the paintings. We're hoping that it's going to be a proper sound installation, so it's not just going to be a stereo setup of two speakers. Yeah. We're hoping to get Craig. I've already spoke to him about it, but we're hoping it's going to be a quadraphonic setup. So that means four speakers.
That's a big word, quadraphonic.
So hopefully that'll be interesting because we'll be having like sort of separate sounds from each individual speaker.
Nice.
I'll be using Ableton and it'll all be pre-recorded. It'll be primarily electronic with field recordings, but I am using the saxophone as well.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You wanted to get onto this, didn't you? Yeah. Everybody wants to get onto that. I am, because we got a sort of an abandoned shopping space in Prospect Centre. This was with E Street Arts and Frank Lamb, who sort of coordinates this part of the UK, I think. But basically, he got the keys to this space and gave it to our tutors. But I looked at the space and I thought, oh, I could really jam with a saxophone in here acoustically. It's a dream. And it was. So far I've only been able to do a couple. There's like a natural reverb in that space, so the sax just sounds amazing basically, because each note just sort of resonates in the space. It's not closed off. So I'm hoping that I'm sort of using some of those recordings. Yeah, it's going to be a combination of electronic production, but with sort of field recordings and homemade sounds and, like I said, the saxophone as well.
Nice. And so the sound recordings, they'll complement the paintings.
Yeah. I mean, I think in some ways it might contrast, but deliberately, you know, it's a sort of interesting juxtaposition. Because I'm definitely thinking of landscapes, and I really like how music can serve like many functions. You know, it can be this thing that is just four to the floor, wanna dance, you know, put your favourite pop tunes on, but it can also serve as something that's really environmental and just creates a ambience and an atmosphere. And I can definitely see it
coming together in your own
Yeah, style. Because I am definitely thinking of the sound while I'm painting. That's the interesting thing. It's all merging. Same with the sound when I go back to think, these landscapes that I'm painting, have they sort of... Can they be communicated by sound? If they can't, maybe they can be contrasted. Maybe they can be a sort of juxtaposition a little bit. Because I can imagine the paintings being quite sort of peaceful and quite pretty and quite nice. And I can imagine the musical side, the having a bit more of a sort of darker, maybe more tense element.
That sounds really interesting. I'm really looking forward to seeing it at the degree show. And, well, yeah, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It was, you know, lovely talking to you as always. And, yeah, like I said, I can't wait for the degree show to see everyone's work. I'm really looking forward to it.
Awesome. Me too. Cheers, Alice.
Thank you. Up next, we're joined by Jules May. Hi, Jules. It's lovely to see you and lovely to have you on Yada Chat. So what made you join the course at Hull College?
Well, nice to be here again, Alice, to meet you. The reason I started the course was I've been working in mental health for 15 years and I needed a change in my life. Mm. And I've always wanted to do my art degree. Obviously, since I was 19, I'd left, I started a foundation course, I left that, went on to work, you know, life just took over.
Yeah.
So it came to a point that the starting point of it was that I'd actually organised an event in Scunthorpe, which was an exhibition for music and artists to get involved in the community in a local music venue.
Yeah.
And so sort of involving myself in that and organising that, as well as involving myself in producing work for it, I just thought, well, why am I not actually taking my degree, which is what I should have done when I was younger, but, you know, life takes over. But I always believe that it doesn't matter how old you are, it doesn't matter when you decide to do this, the time is only right for you when you decide to do it. So that's what set me on the process of coming to Hull College and finding out what they had on offer.
Ah, lovely. So tell us a bit more about your practice and the work that you produce.
Well, I'm a person that draws and paints. From life, direct observation. I'm not somebody who can automatically use that then to create abstract work. However, some of my practice does end up looking very abstract due to the process. So, for instance, I've drawn a wall, and it was an Artex wall. You might not know what an Artex wall is. It's non-existent these days, but it's a textured wall. So I drew a wall in my second year with pencil on paper, and then I transposed that into a photoshopped image, created a larger image. So it can then become abstract through direct observation.
Yeah.
So in my first year, I decided that I would go down that route. It would be from what I'm seeing in front of me, the world around me. So objects within the space, objects out of my comfort zone, so out of my home. Through the lockdown, obviously, I used most of my space and what was around me to present my work in the first year. But the second year, it progressed from there. And I went a bit more intense with the drawing, so it went more detail, sort of very intricate, tiny dots, lines, dashes. And that's how it works. But it's never a set thing. I've never been somebody that specifically does one thing. It just develops.
Yeah, you like to experiment with...
It just develops. And that's what you get from the opportunity of coming. You get that through your first year.
Yeah.
And your second year, you get that sort of almost realisation that actually what I did at the beginning doesn't really work, but what I'm doing now is working.
Yeah. I always thought that's one of the great things about the college is because there's so many, there's all the different courses and there's just so many opportunities where, you know, if you're interested in ceramics, you can go off and learn pottery. And
so you get that opportunity to do small little pockets of it and then decide for yourself.
Yeah, and, you know, there's performance, you know, filmmaking, printing, just... It's the journey.
I never thought I'd go into painting because drawing was my main thing. But then obviously being introduced to, never used oils. I used to use acrylic. Mm. And acrylic's really hard to use when you're trying to represent something of what you see because of the drying process and stuff like that. Whereas oils gives you that sort of like second chance.
It takes ages to dry.
Yeah, you can, and you can go completely over that if it's not what you think it should be. So oils is probably my thing, and drawing. Oh. So, yeah.
Nice. Moving on towards the upcoming degree show.
Yeah.
So would you like to tell us a bit about what your current project is all about and what to expect?
Well, during the second year, I've gone through this process of the beauty of nothing. And to explain the beauty of nothing, that is if I had a bowl of fruit in front of me and drew that. It's nothing. It's mundane. It's not anything specific. It's just a bowl of fruit. So I'm drawing that. But taking that further, just going more into it, probably taking a section and just making that more definite. So it becomes abstract in a way. However, that process then sort of ended for me somehow. And during the third year, I just thought, how do I represent me within the art college? And would that be relevant? So I decided to use the art college as my basis. Firstly, because it's community based.
Yeah.
There's a sort of collaboration of people around. There's these ideas. There's one person who's an individual. Then there's the group of people that then make up that college. So I thought, how do I represent that? So I decided that I would still do direct observation and create work based on the surroundings.
Yeah.
So the building itself, the interior of the building, some of the exterior of the building. And that's where I am. And that's hopefully what's going to happen and be finished for the degree show. Who knows? Fingers crossed.
I like the contrast between during lockdown and COVID, obviously. Well, you were at home, and so obviously you had to draw from your surroundings there. But it's like, but now it's, you're at the college, you're surrounded by people, and it's nice to sort of see that, like, the freedom, being able to be around people again.
It's nice. And I think trying to connect what I'm doing this time with actually the ambition from when I was 19, wanting to go and do my degree, it's sort of almost a big journey that I've just been on, and it's accumulated me representing the art school itself. I mean, it's not done specifically about that, but it has that connection as well. The art school is relevant to me, and it will be relevant to other people, because people will come and see that and they're probably, oh, I recognise that space, or oh, I remember being here, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
And it just connects with that creative side of me, as well as the process that I'm using of direct observation and the sort of history of my journey, really.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing it. And like also the size of your work as well, it's quite, well, the proportion, like that's something that's definitely grown over the course. I remember the drawings and paintings, they were quite small, weren't they? And now,
if you're going to do it big, you do it big. But at the end of the day, it needed to be large because the space is large. So you can't... Yes, you can do a small painting, and I would have attempted it.
Yeah.
But I think that size is... It probably would have gone larger if I'd been able to. If the space had have allowed, I would have gone larger. But I'm really enjoying it. And I can't wait for the degree show. I think it'll be a really fantastic evening. There's just so many different people, different genres throughout the whole year.
Yeah, that's what I've really loved about the course, just because when you first start, you almost expect like, oh, well, with me, I've never been a great drawer. And I was worried that would be what we were expected to do all the time.
Yeah.
But it's not like that at all. It's so varied.
Yeah.
And it just allows for so much more. Thank you so much for joining us, Jules. It's lovely, lovely talking to you.
It's a pleasure. Always.
Thank you. This is a content warning for mentions of childhood trauma and abuse. If you want to avoid this content, skip to the next interview, which begins at 29 minutes. Here with us now, we're joined by Kira Bielby. Thanks so much for joining us. So how's everything going?
Brilliant at the minute. I mean, I had some technical difficulties this morning, but we won't go into that. I might have lost all my audio, I might not have. But, well, at the minute, there's a lot going on.
Busy.
Because, we're getting close to the end now, so And not only have we got to sort ourselves out, but we've got to sort out all of our studio spaces and everybody else's studio space. So, busy week, but we're getting there.
At this time of year, it's all about, like, the layout, isn't it?
And yeah.
What goes where and the curation.
Mm-hmm, that's it, yeah.
Yeah. So what brought you to the college to study fine art?
Well, first I was at Wilberforce when I actually left school and then stayed there for a bit and realised that it wasn't for me at all. So I decided to come here because I thought there was a lot more opportunity for me. You can go bigger and bolder and
yeah. With
Hull College you can go further and beyond.
Yeah, it's a lot more freedom.
Absolutely, yeah. So I thought this was going to be the best opportunity for me. I love doing fine art and they had it right there for me. So yeah, that was mainly what made me join, was because of the fine art course and how far you could take it.
Yeah. Have you enjoyed the course so far? Obviously, it's been tricky, hasn't it, with COVID and lockdowns and pandemics and everything.
Absolutely. I think COVID, probably the hardest things to go through doing university and COVID at the same time, especially because you didn't have the space that you needed. And you know, my project at that time was including a lot of other people. So it was like, I couldn't go out and meet them. Everything had to be through a screen. It was awful. But we got it done, you know. The college was really, really lenient for us because they knew the circumstances. Yeah. It wasn't great to work through. But yeah, they made it so much easier for us.
Good. They have been very sort of understanding. I mean, I remember, obviously, because I did my final year fine art and then my master's all basically like through the different lockdowns. And with each of them, they were, you know, they were as helpful as possible. You know, if you needed certain equipment, they'd be able to, you know, help out as best they could and provide stuff. And
absolutely, because we've not been through this before and nobody here knows what it's like to work through a pandemic. So they really, really did try and help us.
Yeah, I agree. Like, the major issue was space, because obviously working from home, I mean, I think we all got through it, didn't we?
Oh, God, yeah.
So tell me a bit about your practice and maybe the past projects leading up towards the final year.
Absolutely. So mainly when you're doing a theme and you can do whatever you want on that theme, I like to do things that are quite close to me. So the very first one I did, I worked at a mechanics and I did, I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but there's these Haynes manuals.
Okay.
And in them Haynes manuals, mechanics used to use those to fix cars. So it will tell you how a car, it will tell you how to build a car and how to like take it down. And I thought they were quite fascinating because on the front of the book, you could see, it was like an x-ray of a car. So you could see everything through it. You could see all of the chairs and all of the wires inside of the car and all the pipes and stuff. So I like drew big versions of them cars. There was a lot of detail in it. And that was my first project. See, because I was really into cars at that time.
Yeah.
In the second year, I moved on to things that kind of defied gravity a little bit. So I based my project around M.C. Escher's pieces and I kind of like made my own. So I used the laser machine, the laser cutter.
Nice.
And I made my own defied gravity of staircases out of MDF wood. And that was the first time I've ever done that before. It was really, really cool. And at that point, I had big spirals. I think they were maybe about 4 foot long, 5 foot long, that I hung from the ceiling and people could twist them. So once you step back and twist them, you'd be able to see an illusion effect from it. And I thought that was quite cool. So that was my second course. My last one that I've just done was basically around my childhood trauma, if you want to say. So what I did was I was abused by my dad when I was younger. So I was on TV because he's in prison now. So I was on the news for it and I got a lot of response off people either saying that they were proud of me or that they were abused themselves.
Yeah.
And I still talk to those people now. And we came together and we all wrote a letter, an anonymous letter to our abusers, like our final words to them. Do you know what I mean? So we all wrote those and I kept them to a side, and I got a big board out and I wrote a letter to people in prison to see if they wanted to, like, you know, say their side and tell their story. Unfortunately, I didn't get any response off any of the criminals, which speaks a thousand words, as already. So on one side, I had all of our, I don't call us victims. We aren't victims, we're survivors. So on the survivor side, I had all of our anonymous letters to our abusers. And then on the other side, I had one empty column from the convicted. And I shoved that in the window and wanted people to read them.
Yeah.
Just to, like, kind of get into the little bit of a mindset where survivors actually come from. Because people don't think about it of the aftermath.
No.
Yeah, you get your justice because they're in prison, but it still affects you for, in the long run. So that was my last one.
So as far as the degree shows, you know, it's not that far away now. You know, do you want to tell us about the projects this year? And I think you said before it's bringing forward themes from your last project.
Absolutely, yeah. It is a follow-up from the last project. It doesn't involve the survivors that I used last time. It's mainly based around me.
Yeah.
And what happened during my experience. So I'm making a room that's 8 foot by 8 foot, and it's going to be completely blacked out.
Yeah.
And it's just going to have a little ledge on one of the walls with a chair in front of it so people can sit down. And it's going to have little headphones. And once you sit down, you put the headphones on and you'll play my audio that I've made, which is basically me, my sister and my mum. But from the point of... See, when I was abused, I was too young to understand what was happening to me. So I didn't understand what had happened to me until I did my first sex education class. So the audio starts off with the teacher telling me, you know, telling the class to sit down. We're going to be talking about sex ed and all this lot.
Yeah.
And then 4 years later, I tell my sister about it. So it's like a timeline from my confession to me calling the police and actually confronting the police about it.
Yeah.
So that's what they'll listen to when they're sat down. But around the room, because it's blackout, I have some glow-in-the-dark spray paint. In green, I'm going to have... So, like, my dad used to say awful words to me to manipulate me into thinking that what he was doing was good. And then in red, I'm going to have worse words all over the walls because I want to put that person who's experiencing my audio, I want to put them into my head. Because, yes, it's a blackout room and you've got a little desk in front of you with kids' toys on it. And, like, there's teddy bears all over the floor and there's scrumpled up paper on the floor. I want them to experience what I was going through in my head, if you know what I mean. Which, it is traumatic now. So there's going to have to be a warning sign on it for people before they enter. But yeah, I'm just really hoping that it gets through to people the way I'm hoping it would.
It sounds really powerful. And I think especially, you know, the installation people, they'll be walking in, they'll almost be, well, you know, especially with a dark room and the words on the wall.
Yeah. I want them to feel, like, creeped out a bit, like, oh, this is intense.
Yeah, I didn't want to say
no,
that,
yeah, absolutely.
I know that sort of vibe, I think.
Yeah.
I'm really interested to see how it all comes together in the space. I've always really liked the concept of a room within a room, you know. So, like, in the upstairs there's gonna be an 8 foot by 8 foot room, you know. Wanted to say thank you so much for coming and talking to me today, and thanks for sharing your projects, and, you know, I wish you all the best.
Yeah, it's been brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hey Tonks, thanks for joining us. So how's everything coming along?
Hi, yeah, it's going pretty well to be fair. It's plodding along, getting on with it.
Good.
Smashing it out.
Good, that's what we want to hear. So have you always had an interest in the arts? What brought you on to the course at the college?
I've always had an interest in the arts. I think I was finger painting with my mum since I was like 4 months old. It was always happening. So somewhat bred for it, I guess. But yeah, it's always been an interest. It's always been a focus, like primary school, high school, college. It was like, that's what I'm doing.
Nice.
That's what it's going to be doing. So just going on to a fine art degree just sort of made sense.
Yeah. Oh, nice. I've seen you've been really busy recently with the Interchange project, working with Absolutely Cultured. Do you want to tell us a bit about what's been going on there?
Yeah, that's been very busy. It was like a year-long project, the Interchange program. It was, I think it was about like 8 or 10 of us at the end of it, where it was like artists in many different stages of their lives just wanting to learn more about like the art world and it's like a business sense.
Nice.
It came out with Humber Street Gallery at the end of it, like having an exhibition, which I've exhibited some of my sculptural work in.
Nice.
To do with it all, and it's turned out pretty, you know, there was mistakes made throughout it, but it was definitely got there in the end.
Yeah, well, the great thing, especially with a project like that, is it's a massive learning opportunity. You go on loads of like masterclasses, and
absolutely,
you go to different areas and they bring people in, and the whole process of it is testing and trying stuff out, which I think is really great.
Yeah, it's a fun opportunity just to like try out what you wouldn't normally. There's no risk. You can give it a go, and if it doesn't work out, you'd be like, okay, probably shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Has sculptures and tactile stuff always been your focus in terms of your practice?
Not always. I used to paint and draw and stuff like that, and I still do occasionally. I still, you know, go back to painting. But when I hit like 16, I started looking into like found objects, installation work, Robert Rauschenberg. And that sort of set me on a path of just picking stuff up off the street and like whacking it in like up in the air, hanging off ceilings. And that went from that to molding stuff with my own hands, like editing said materials to mold it into my own stuff. Currently it's ceramics. It's just different materials for what I want. I think for a good while it's going to be sculptures and installations for
cool.
As long as,
yeah, I always think like once you find installations you get really drawn into it.
Yeah, it's fun. It's not limiting. You know
as soon as you're like, oh, I'm doing installations, just like all that extra space then,
yeah,
like, oh well, yeah, Tonks is gonna need like a whole room now.
Yeah, the bigger the better. It's always the bigger the better.
Yeah.
I think I've always been like, let's upscale this, let's throw more together, let's make more pieces.
Yeah.
Just the urge to create is just there. So like the urge to make more. So some pieces end up 8 foot and some pieces end up like there's 50 like ones that you can hold in your hand and you're like, I went a bit farther, but
yeah. Once you start you can't stop.
Exactly,
yeah.
It's addictive. It's my addiction.
Do you want to tell us a bit about your current project for the degree show? So you've been working on this alongside the Interchange project.
Yeah, well, both exhibitions actually like cross over. Mm. So when the degree show's on, the Interchange show will still be on at Humber Street Gallery. And that's had its pros and cons. Like it means I'm having to make double the amount of work, which...
Yeah.
Believe me.
I know, I was thinking about this.
Horrible, but also very rewarding and beautiful because it means I can create almost like a unison of two pieces. Currently, it's my sculptures based around queer identity, trans identity. In Humber Street Gallery at the minute, it's what I call my gender talismans and my gender sculptures and statues, where it's kind of like, because I wasn't really taught about queer history or trans history, because no one is really.
No.
So I sort of created my own Arcadia, like my own euphoric, beautiful alien civilization of, if it was just not even, it was a talking point, fair enough, but it wasn't even, you don't even bat an eyelid when, oh, you're queer, all right, and good for you, like done,
yeah.
Done, next thing. So they're the ones now I'm working on are going to be more like a bit less gender based, a bit more sexual, like sexuality, a bit more based around like the idea of you don't have to be like a curvy, big hipped, big bust woman to be fertile.
Yeah.
Essentially, there's more to it. There's more to it than like those birthing hips. Like,
I know. But so your themes are on sexuality and...
Sexuality, my own transness, my own queerness, basically just not coming to terms with that because, you know, I'm fine. I'm quite happy with that. I'm proud to be trans and queer and stuff. But more of like the first in-depth study on my own transness and queerness and what that personally, you know, creating my, because we, you know, we all create our own identity, we all create our own how we present to the world. If you're cis, queer, like, you know, left or right, don't really matter, you still create it. So it's a study on that on my own.
Yeah.
And then what if there was like a world full of Tonkses just roaming about?
I think that would be a very beautiful place.
It would be, yeah, it'd be summer. It'd be summer. Yeah, but
there'd be flowers all over the place. There'd be just like rainbows.
Waterfalls, unicorns. Yeah.
So it's gonna be sculpture based again.
Yeah.
And have you had any sort of thoughts around the installation?
The pieces at the minute, I'm playing on the idea of, like, it's gonna sound so weird, but I was watching, you know, old sex ed videos. And that's kind of where the inspiration's come from.
I'll attach a link at the bottom of the podcast.
Like, I was watching old sex ed videos, and, like, basically the sculptures are based around fertility at its base, which is, like, sperm entering egg. And, like, the little wiggle that the sperm does entertained me quite a lot. Whatever that means in my life. But, yeah, so that's how it was. And playing around with the idea of, like, displaying it museum-wise, displaying it in the gallery, and then a mixture of it different, like...
different forms of curation, I guess.
Exactly, because it's also, like, the idea of displaying it, it's based around the idea of, like, how colonialism affected queer history and how it kind of took it away from queer people and queer societies and trans societies as well, obviously. The idea of a museum is this, you know, if this alien civilization did exist and does exist, that's again been taken away. So it's presented museum-like, but it's playing to the idea that they have the power over it as well. And do I really want, like, a repeating of history, essentially, with my own Arcadia, with my own utopia? It's not.
Yeah.
It'd be quite sad
Yeah.
if I was to do that, but it's just the thought process of it.
That's really interesting. I really like the concept. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. And
me too.
And if the Interchange exhibition is anything to go by, I know it's going to be really exciting.
Yeah, I'm quite proud. It was my first, like, step out into the big wild world. Well, all of them were really talented artists, to be fair. I was impressed with it all.
It's been lovely chatting to you, Tonks.
Yeah, it's been absolutely lovely.
I look forward to seeing your work at the degree show.
So do I, and everyone else's.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Here with us now, we're joined by Tom Robinson. So, Tom, let's go back to the beginning of the course. What made you choose this course in particular?
I don't know if I can really remember, but I know that I always had an interest in art. I think it was always that thing that I didn't quite follow it enough. I didn't maybe have enough faith in myself to really go for it when I left school. And when I was starting the course, I'd kind of had a big change in my life. So I'd moved back to live in Hull after living in Spain for 5 years. And because I was kind of restarting a lot of things, I thought I may as well take this opportunity now to go back to university. Mm-hmm. I tried to go to university before previously when I left school, but it, one reason or another, it didn't work out. And then I knew it had to be something related to art, and I knew that it had to be something in Hull. So... Yeah. Yeah, Hull College is the place.
From seeing your work previously, I know you've always had an interest in archives and archiving. And has that been the same throughout the years building up to where we are now?
Well, I think this is what's happened during the 3 years of the course, which I didn't always have an interest in archives, but I was always archiving.
Yeah.
And then I kind of put all of that together to create my main project, which is the Aimless Archive, which has just come out of a long process of keeping notebooks originally, keeping diaries, building photograph albums, scrapbooking and you know, this kind of collage thing, which is what I did before the course. I don't really know what really impelled me to do that. I just kind of liked the look of those kind of documents.
Yeah.
So when I started the course, we kind of started with drawing projects and printmaking projects and all that kind of thing. But the recording of those activities, the sort of sketchbooking part, I could easily relate to what I'd always done before in notebooks and albums and scrapbooks. Yeah, so from there, it's quite a short leap to thinking about that as an archiving process. And I kind of just built this framework around that.
Well, they always say, don't they, you know, if you do something that you really enjoy doing, you're going to do well at it because it's a passion, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But it's also just that comes out from being in a education institution. And I'm lucky that with the tutors that we have on the fine art course, it's all very much about what you're bringing to the activities, or, well, they're not even activities, they're kind of modules. There are things that you need to evidence for learning outcomes, but how you do that isn't really an issue.
Yeah.
So you can take it where you want it to be taken.
Mm.
It makes sense to do the things that you're interested in.
Yeah.
It's quite basic, but it's still I still feel that people need to be reminded of that sometimes, that I've kind of spoken to people who study fine art in other institutions, and they feel like they're being forced down a certain path and creating work to fit to a brief.
It can be quite constricting sometimes, can't it?
Yeah, whereas this course kind of flips that on the head, where you're doing something and then you kind of make it fit to a module.
Has the freedom almost been constricting in another way?
So what, too vast, you mean?
Yeah.
Times, yeah. But that refining that is kind of what you're doing, and putting constraints on yourself with any project. I think that's an important skill to have. It just kind of made perfect sense to me that the process is more important and more interesting than the outcome. So, don't think about something as a final piece. Think about something as work that's in development, and work that's always developing.
Yeah.
You might get to a stage where you think it's kind of fixed or finished.
So going to the degree show, it's coming up on the 1st of June. What should everyone expect to see? Well, without maybe giving too much away.
Well, in the previous show, we had a show at the end of our foundation degree, which was the second year of the course. And that was kind of the first time that I'd used the Aimless Archive as a display device, if you like, where we had things in the windows. I kind of learned a lot from that, because it gave a very fixed way of viewing something, having something at a window. It wasn't really ever what the archive was about. I always felt that archives are something that you can go to whichever depth you want to go into it. So you can maybe appreciate an archive at a surface level. Maybe you see that there's a certain book or document there, or you really kind of read the whole thing. But having it in the window meant that you could only do so much. You could only sort of look at it rather than kind of interact with it.
So is this year?
So hopefully this year I have the chance to kind of bring people in, but also I'm interested in moving visitors around. So much of what I'm showing will not be at the college.
Ah.
It will be in other locations.
Nice, almost like a treasure map of.
A little bit like that,
yeah.
which again, to me that's kind of what an archive is. You have. You have things in certain places. I'm not putting any pressure on anyone to do the trail, to do the treasure hunt kind of thing. They have the permission to do it if they want to.
So where are some of these locations?
Well, as I said, the college will be kind of where you'll find out about the locations. But there's a couple in Hull, and I'm hoping that there's going to be something to see in Scarborough as well. So the project itself has its own title, which is Ulteriors.
Thanks, Tom. It was really nice talking to you, and I'm looking forward to seeing your work at the show and going around and finding the
aimless archive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Up next, we're going to be hearing from Del Greenham, who has shared with me a document he's written about his project for the upcoming degree show. The idea behind Del's self-led professional project has to be a journey of self-awareness and understanding. His project is a very personal inward look into his own psyche and coping methods with his thoughts and experiences. Initially, he started this project to attempt to understand why people are naturally drawn to art from a young age, and why people use this as a method of expression to make sense of themselves and the world around them, and why some people continue to create art throughout their lives, and why others seem to suddenly stop making art as they progress through their life. Del has always used art as a method of therapy, a way in which he can make sense of the world around him and collect his thoughts. This project has been a way for him to use art as a coat of armour and methodically go back through his thoughts and memories. Del has grown up within the care system due to his mother being in and out of mental institutions. Several other family members have also suffered with their mental health, including himself. Art has always given Del a method of release, and believes that art is such an important aspect of a person's development. He's always had a passion for helping people and would like to continue doing so using art. But in order to understand and help others, he believes it's important to first understand himself. This is where his project comes in. Del has never been great dealing with his own thoughts and feelings. Previously, he would run from thoughts and experiences that would spring to mind, and only allow himself to selectively process certain experiences and memories within his life. This has led him to having a chaotic, overloaded mind within his adult years, which has led to him having his own mental health issues. This project has been a way for him to go back through his thoughts and experiences and process them using the medium of art. The project has become a visual representation of his mind, a collection of chaotic thoughts overlapping onto the next. Del has gradually picked these thoughts apart, starting from his earliest memory, attempting to pinpoint the fragmented memory and focus on it while drawing it, essentially allowing himself to process and move past the memory. While doing this, he's been looking into the early work of Carl Jung and Sigmund Freud, trying to get a better grasp of psychology and psychoanalysis. He's also been looking into the life and work of Vincent van Gogh and studying the writings from an art historian. One in particular was titled The Artistry of the Mentally Ill. Combining these factors and working through his own thoughts and experiences in such a methodical manner has given him great insight into his own thought process and started to pave the way to understanding himself and others. Each memory has been divided into two sections. 1. Order, a collection of memories that have been methodically organised and processed. 2. Chaos, a visual representation of a mind full of unprocessed thoughts. There's also going to be a third section added to the exhibition, which will include fragments of a general introduction to psychoanalysis. The idea behind this project is a simple one. In order to understand and help others, Del must first understand himself. I'd just like to say a massive thank you to Del for sharing this information with me, and I'm really looking forward to seeing his work. We are joined now by Maria Donne. So, Maria, how did you come to start the fine art degree at Hull College?
I was lucky enough, I used to be a veterinary nurse, and I was lucky enough to sell my share of the practice that I owned. And as a result of that, I then spent a year just playing, did a few art courses just for fun, and thought, oh, I like this. I think I'll keep doing it a bit more. So I took the access course at the college. And because I enjoyed doing that, I just thought, well, how can I carry on? And I looked at doing the fine art degree. So I just stuck with that and kept going.
The rest is history almost, isn't it, really? And now we're nearly at the degree show. That's like the accumulation of everything, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I do feel like I've had lockdown for 2 years of a degree. Yeah. I feel like I've only had 1 year out of a 3 year degree course. But even so, it's been good.
So your projects, they focus around natural history and collections. Is that something that you've always worked with and had an interest in?
Yeah, because as I said, because I was a veterinary nurse before, I've always been interested in animals. And I found in the first year, I was really looking at natural history collections and then science and anatomical posters, art and illustrations of scientific things, really.
Yeah.
From there, because I just really enjoyed the whole looking at animals and looking at the insides of animals and how they're made up and the skeletons, I just kept progressing with that. And in the second year, I worked on it a lot more. And I had an opportunity to just keep going to natural history museums and looking at collections, which is something I love doing anyway. So I just incorporated that into my work because I like doing it.
So it's almost on a parallel with the fine art degree. You've got an opportunity to sort of give a nod to that
in yeah
a way, whilst also you sort of you're getting the enjoyment of the creativity of drawing and
turning it into something more creative rather than it being sort of sciencey based. When I first started, I tried to do different art. I wasn't going to do animals. I wasn't going to be like the old woman sat in the corner painting dogs. No matter what I did, I ended up looking at animals, and I thought, well, you know, that's obviously what interests me. It's obviously something that I like. So just accept it and do it.
Yeah.
And that's where it's led on to, really.
Yeah. I was saying to Tom before about, you know, find something that makes you really happy. And if that's animals, you know, don't think, oh, you know, I'm an old lady in the corner. Because you're not. You basically, it's your passion. And like, that's what people love to see, that passion in people. And yeah.
Definitely. I think in the first year, I really thought, oh, what should I be doing? And then by the second year, I was like, oh, I'm just doing what I want to do. And now I'm in the third year, I've found the things I really love and I enjoy doing it. And I think it shows as well, because if you enjoy it, it's better stuff, it's better work.
Yeah. So am I right in believing there's actually, well, that there's quite a lot of excitement around your current project this year? I've heard something about a discovery as well.
Yeah, it's really exciting this year, because last year I was doing lots of research and visiting natural history museums and looking at different collections. And part of my research, I was looking at the dodo, obviously the most sort of well-known symbol of extinction.
Yeah.
And while I was researching this, I was looking at, there was quite a craze about dodos in the 1800s. It was people were collecting, gathering sort of specimens from abroad, and then people were stealing them. And it was great excitement. And while I was researching that, a lady got in contact with me, Melissa Graham, and she said she had a few things that I might be interested in. I wasn't really sure, because I thought, well, it sounds a bit odd, but I was able to go and meet up with her just before lockdown. And just in one of those small windows when you could actually get out. And when I got there, she had, well, what she claimed to be a collection of dodo bones. And apparently she'd inherited these from a relative, Samuel James Johnson. And they'd just been passed through the family, and she kept hold of them for years. When I had a look at them, it was quite exciting, because there were two boxes with pieces of fragments of bone in there. Then there was also a collection of glass slides, which looked a little bit like prints or photos. I can't really tell, to be honest. Mm. And then a box full of writings. There was like pages from Samuel James Johnson's diary and sketches. And I thought, well, what is this? What can I do with it? And she said, well, she reckoned that Samuel James Johnson had found these remains. Well, in his diary, it said in 1878, and he'd found these remains in East Yorkshire, and he claimed that they were the skeleton of a dodo. I thought, well, this is just nuts, but we'll go with it. and got chatting to her, and she was really, really nice lady. And she said I could borrow all these pieces to use for my final degree show. So brought them back to college. And most of the year I've been just looking at, well, I've been learning really more about research, curation, and how these pieces could just be used a bit like an installation in my final degree show. But while I was doing that, I started to research a little bit more into Samuel James Johnson, who'd found these pieces. Yeah. And it does look very much as though they're quite genuine. It looks as though he, in 1878, a part of his land washed away on Sunk Island in East Yorkshire, and he found this collection of bones. And, well, we don't know for sure, but I managed to persuade Melissa to let me send one of the pieces to the Natural History Museum in London. Yeah. So that's there now, and they're analysing it, doing whatever fancy, clever things they do to try and work out exactly when it's from. But it does look as if this might actually be genuine. So it'd be quite exciting because we'd try and find out how they got there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know much about, like, the history of the dodo in general, but has it been known that they've been in England?
No, well, the dodo lived on Mauritius, and I think we discovered it in about early 1600s, and within 40 years of sailors discovering it, it was extinct because people were hunting it, and then it was introduction of rats and dogs and things to Mauritius, and they died out.
I always think of Ice Age.
Yeah.
You've seen that film. Yeah. The dodos, they're always like... They're running after the watermelon, and then literally all of them
gone.
They all just fall into a volcano, or fall off a cliff.
Cliff, and that's it. Oh. Yeah,
it's nice to know that they didn't all.
They didn't all fall off. No, they're thinking that what might have happened is that somebody, explorer or adventurer, might have tried to have dodos sent back to England. Well, I think quite a lot of people tried to send dodos back to England as a novelty.
They've always been like a gift.
Yeah, you know, that's right. Like, it was an exciting novelty gift, but I think it was assumed that these never made England alive. But it's looking as though maybe some did.
Some did,
and that they were just kept possibly for breeding, maybe for food, and they existed on Sunk Island. So it's quite, be amazing if this is true.
So did you reach out to Melissa?
She found me through all the research that I'd been doing. I'd been in contact with a man called Julian Hume, who is a real expert on dodos. And I think she'd spoken to him, and it just sort of went on from there. So.
Oh. Who you know.
It is. So it's just been luck. And that's it. Yeah. It's just been luck. And, it's so exciting to be doing this.
So in terms of the degree show, what's to be expected from, the public coming in and seeing the space?
Melissa was very insistent that I didn't mess up the collection. So she wanted everything to stay together and not to be altered. So I've tried to put it together, keep it all intact, and put it together as it would have looked if it had been installed in a natural history museum in the 19th century. So people can expect to see the genuine pieces and a little bit of an explanation about what they are, where they're from, a little bit of information about the dodo, and just see it as if it's in a museum display. Chris and Joe have been really good. We're looking at it as an installation piece, so fitting in with the module that way.
Oh, well, that's really exciting, and it's really, really big. Well, for the college, for the area, for the history of the dodo.
I know, it's just crazy. It'll be so exciting.
Yes, well, I'm really looking forward to seeing it. And so the degree show, it is the 1st of June.
But then it'll be open after the Jubilee holiday, I think, because the college will be shut for a few days, but then when it's open for a couple of weeks, isn't it?
Lovely.
Yeah, hopefully people will come and flock to see the dodo.
Well, I'm sure they will. So thank you. It was lovely talking to you, and I'll see you at the show.
Yeah, look forward to seeing you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Series 3 of Yadda Chat. You can find out more about this podcast and platform through visiting our website at www.yadda-yadda-noise.com. You can also follow our social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all at yadda-yadda-noise.
yada,
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 yada, yada,
yada, yada,
yada, yada,
yada,
yada, yada,
yada, yada,
yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada, yada,